I want to put something on the table. I'd like you to react to it, and then we'll see as far as we can go with regard to some of the particular texts and the materials that I prepared. So, Me'inyana Diyoma is the issue of Amalek. And it's Me'inyana Diyoma in more ways than are readily apparent. Not just because we're getting close to Purim, and Purim is Haman, and Purim is Amalek, and before Purim there's a Shabbos called Shabbos Parsha Zohar, when we read the Parsha of Amalek, and we are mekayem the mitzvah of Zechiras Amalek. But the identification of Amalek is so Me'inyana Diyoma in terms of what's going on today in the world, and particularly in Israel, that I cannot possibly overestimate the significance and the importance of it. We should not at all for a second think that the identity of Amalek is something that is a kiyum in Torah Lishma. What do we mean by Amalek? Who was Amalek? What is Amalek? But the issue of Amalek is front and center today in a way that I will show you momentarily. And I'm going to ask you when I finish putting on the table the preliminary few pages is to think yourselves about how would you deal with this issue. So I Xerox for you on the first page, after the two references that I used for tonight's presentation, a book that just came out, Princeton University Press, Reckless Rights, Purim and the Legacy of Jewish Violence, and an article in the Harvard Theological Review that was published in 1994. So on page one, you have the psukim. You have the first reference to Amalek in the Torah. Amalek is an enekel, a grandchild of Esav. And this is important. Look at Lamed Vav Aleph. Ve'ela toldos Esav hu Edom. So Esav and Edom are identified with one another. And then Esav has Eliphaz, and then Eliphaz has Amalek. So Amalek equal Esav equal Edom. We'll come back to this equation. Extremely important equation. And then Shmos Yud Zayin from Parshas Bishalach, the Parsha that we just read very recently, which is the first historical confrontation, not with an individual named Amalek, as in Parshas Vayishlach, but with a nation called Amalek. And then in Dvarim Chav Hei, what we read for the Kriyas HaTorah of Parshas Zohar, Zohar Es Asher Asu L'chamo. The top of page two, I xeroxed for you from the Pasuk in Shmuel Aleph, the Pesukim that talk about Shaul HaMelech. That you know that Shaul HaMelech was given an obligation and a requirement to destroy Amalek, and there was some question about the fact that he did not fully fulfill it in accordance with the Ratzon of Hashem. Pasuk Gimel, Ato Lech Ve'ikiso Es Amalek Ve'acharamtam Es Kol Asherlo Ve'lo Sachmo Lolov Ve'heimato Me'ish Ad Isha Me'olel Ad Yonek Mishor Atzeh Migomol Ad Chamor. There's a very strong inclusive obligation here. Everybody, every person, every age, even animals, and the story that happens, that he leaves Agag, and we're familiar with the rest of the story. Now, what I want to begin and put and to start with and bring to your attention is a footnote in Kol Dodi Dofek, written by Rav Soloveitchik. It was a speech that was given across the street in the Nathan Lamport Auditorium on Yom HaTzma'ut of 1956. So this past year, 2006, was the 50th anniversary of the delivery of Kol Dodi Dofek. The Rav wrote it up later, published it as an article. I believe it first appeared in Hebrew in 1960, and then it was translated into English. In order to understand a footnote of Kol Dodi Dofek, we have to understand the Diyuk and the Rambam, because the Rav quotes his father who operates off of this Diyuk in the Rambam. So the bottom of page two. The Rambam says in Ilchus Malachim Perakei Alocha Dalid, Mitzvah Saseh Lahachrim Shiva Amimim, Shenemar Acharein Pacharimei. V'kol Shebo Lo Yodo Echad Me'en V'lo HaRogo, Over B'lo Saseh, Shenemar Lo Sachaya Kol Neshama. How does the Rambam conclude the Halacha about the obligation to destroy the Shiva Amimim? It's not relevant. You can't do it. You walk out on Amsterdam Avenue, you stop, say, excuse me, ma'am, are you a Chivi, a Gergoshi? Oh, I happen to be a Chiti. Oh, I feel terribly sorry. I hate to do this, but I have to shoot you because there's a mitzvah to be to lahachrim shiva amimim. That won't happen. Why won't it happen? Ukvar ovad zichram. Any zecher of the ethnic designation of the shiva amimim is already gone. So the Radbaz quotes a Mishnah in Yodayim. If you look on the left side, the Radbaz, Umashe Kosav, the top line of the Radbaz, Umashe Kosav Ukvar Ovad Zichram, Lefisha Bo Sancherev U Bilbel Es Ha'olam. Because when Sancherev came, he caused such an upheaval in the world that any ethnic identities were obliterated, were obfuscated. That no longer do we know who is identified with any particular tribe. There was such an upheaval and such a tumult and such a moving around that people lost the sense of tribal identity. And I Xerox for you the mission in Yodayim right below. There's a machlokes tanoim about whether a ger amoni can join the Jewish people. What do you mean? What kind of shail is it? How is it possible? After all, the Torah says, lo yavo amoni me'avi v'kala Hashem gam dor asiri. But the response is, well, yeah, but that's only if you know an amoni. But today, we don't know amonis anymore. Because kvar ola sancherev melech asher bilbol es kol ha'umos. So because there's a bilbol es kol ha'umos, we don't know anymore. We can't identify the Shiva Amamim. We can't identify the Shiva Amamim. Kvar avat zichram, the halach is no longer operative. Halacha hey. V'chei mitzvah saseh la'abed zecher amolek. Shenemar timcheh zecher amolek. His ambush of us. We should arouse in us our hatred of them. We're not allowed to forget our hatred of them. Now, what's my diet in the Rambam? That the Rambam, when it comes to Amalek, does not say Ukvar Avad Zichra. And the question is, why not? The same Mishnah in Yodayim, the same Sancherev who came and was Mevalbel the Olam, so I don't know who an Amoni is. And I don't know who the Shiva Amamim is, so how can I know who an Amaleki is? It's the same ancient tribe, they came from the same time. And if there's a Bilbul and a Tumul and a mix-up, so the Zelba mix-up should be Chal on Amalek also. Why does the Rambam not say Ukvar Ovad Zichram in the context of Amalek? Just like he says, based on the Mishnah in Yadayim, according to the Radbaz, with regard to the Shiva Amin. So the basis of this, that Ramesha Soloveitchik, the Rav's father, said something, which has, and I'm going to show you, and then I'm going to stop and ask you to react, unbelievably profound, contemporary, immediate implications. So turn to page 3. And Kogo Dido Feit, to hold the page sideways. Because I want to read to you the text of this speech and then the footnote of the speech. Divine Providence is testing us once again via the crisis that has overtaken the state of Israel, the land of Israel. What's relevant, just al chatzi regel achas, is that in Yom Ha'atzmaut of 1956, the winds of war for the Sinai campaign, the war, the Suez War, the Sinai War of 1956, which took place in October of 1956, it was already on the horizon. There was a tremendous amount of politicking and a tremendous amount of pressure and tension on Israel. Nasser had gathered together and was ready to attack. The Israelis were begging the Americans to come to their defense. The Americans were not so prepared to come to their defense. The Americans still wanted to have some kind of a relationship with Nasser. It was a very tense and difficult time. So when the Rav got up across the street and talked on Yom HaTzmaut 1956, it was a moment of real crisis in the American Jewish community and in the world Jewish community and in the state of Israel. Divine Providence is testing us once again.
This was when this was written?
It was given. It was read in 1956. It was published in 1960 in Hebrew. But he delivered it in 1956 on Yom HaTzmaut across the street. Divine Providence is testing us once again via the crisis that has overtaken the land of Israel. Let it be clearly stated. The matter does not just affect the political future of the land of Israel. You know what the matter is. I just told you exactly what the matter is. The designs of the Arabs directed not just against the political sovereignty of the state of Israel, but against the very existence of the Yishuv. They weren't out to just destroy the state. They were out to destroy all the Jews who were living there. They wished to destroy, heaven forbid, the entire community. Notice the pasuk. Both men and women, infant and suckling, ox and sheep, Shmuel Aleph Tezvav. We're small Aleph Tezvav, I just read it to you. Right? It's what we are obligated to do in the context of Amalek. That's what they want to do to us. At a Mizrahi convention, I cited the view expressed by my father and master, Mori, Avi Mori, Rav Moshe Soloveitchik of blessed memory. Now listen to this. This is huge. That the proclamation, Melchama L'Hashem Ba'Amalek Midor Dor, does not only translate into the communal exercise of waging obligatory war against a specific race, but includes as well the obligation to rise up as a community against any people or group that, comma, filled with maniacal hatred, comma, directs its enmity against Knesset Yisrael. When a people emblazons on its banner, l'chuvin achidei migoy, v'lo yizocher shem Yisrael od, it becomes thereby Amalek. What is Amalek? Amalek is not an ethnic designation. Amalek, hi Yosef, how are you? Amalek is not a tribe. Amalek is not a people. What is Amalek? What is Amalek?
Idea.
Amalek is an idea. Amalek is an attitude. It's not an it's an attitude. It's not a group, it's a concept. What's the concept? You want to destroy Jews? You have a chalos shem Amalek. It becomes, you become Amalek. You have a din Amalek. You are now Amalek. In the 1930s and 40s, the Nazis with Hitler, Yimach Shemo at their head, filled this role. They were the Amalekites, the standard bearers of insane hatred and enmity during the era just passed. Today, 1956, who's Amalek in 1956? Their place has been taken over by the mobs of Nasser and the Mufti. And then he says, we better stand up. We better fight back. We better get pressure. We better defend the state of Israel. Last time, 8 years ago, during the time of the Holocaust, the Rav has a damning indictment of American Jewry for having been too silent in the Holocaust. And you have to read this article, you have to read this talk. Very upset about the fact, including himself, that American Jewry didn't do what he should have done in the case of the Holocaust. Chas v'shalom, it should never happen again. It shouldn't happen a second time. If we are silent now as well, in addition to the last time we were silent, namely during the Second World War, then shomu shamayim, it's going to be terrible. So what does the Rav say? And Adkan the article. What does he say? That Amalek has now become an attitude. In the footnote, you notice right after the word Amalek is footnote 25. So in footnote 25, now turn the page normal again, same page, don't turn the page over yet, just turn the page sideways. Aryeh, you jumped the gun. Go back. Okay? The same page, Atazai. The Rav quotes the Rambam. Maimonides' Laws of Kings and Their Wars, Perek Hei Halacha Dalet, quotes the Shiva Amamim. It is, however, striking, next paragraph, and it bases the Radbaz and the Mishnah in Yodayim. Next paragraph. It is, however, striking and passing strange that Maimonides, in setting forth the commandment to wipe out Amalek, does not add the concluding phrase. It would appear from Maimonides' statement, end of the paragraph underlined, that Amalek is still in existence, while the seven nations have descended into the abyss of oblivion. Next column, I once heard the following answer from my father and master, Rav Moshe, blessed memory, namely, any nation that conspires to destroy Knesset Yisrael becomes, according to the Halacha, Amalek. And that's why the Rambam does not say, what? Ukvar Avad Zichram, because guess what? It's not Kvar Avad Zichram. It may be Kvar Avad Zichram in terms of the national Amalek, in terms of the ethnic Amalek, in terms of the people Amalek. But the Chaloi Shem Halacha of Amalek is not Kvar Avad Zichram. In the 1930s and 40s, it was him. And in the 1950s, it's him. It's them. It's not at all Kfar Rav Adzichem. They're very much alive. Now, this has incendiary implications. Absolutely incendiary implications. And now it's time to turn the page to a letter of the editor to the Jerusalem Report in July of 2006. So I told you at the beginning that I gave you two references. One is Eliot Horowitz's book on Reckless Rights, Purim, and the Legacy of Jewish Violence. And in this book, Eliot Horowitz quotes from Kol Dodi Dofek, this footnote, that the Rav's position is that Amalek is anybody who wants to destroy Jews or any group that wants to destroy Jews. The book was reviewed in the Jerusalem Report, and then Eliot Horowitz, the author of the book, wrote a response to the reviewer a couple of weeks later. And I just want to read it to you so that you understand how crucial this is. Secondly, on the right-hand side, Shkoyach, thank you. I appreciate it. My attempt to situate Baruch Goldstein. Who's Baruch Goldstein? Guy went into Mosul. What did he do? And he killed 20-something Arabs when? On Purim. When? 1994. My attempt to situate Baruch Goldstein's 1994 massacre of 29 Palestinians within a Purim tradition of hostility to Amalekites. No, it wasn't a coincidence that it was on Purim. Right? Purim is when Zohar Esa Sherosa Lucha Amalek, Haman Ho'agogi. and I'm going to now go ahead and act out against who? Who am I acting out against? Amalek. You know who Amalek is in 1994? According to Baruch Goldstein, those Palestinians who were sitting in the Maris HaMachpelah, who were praying whatever they were doing on that day. Last paragraph. 5 years later, Jewish settlers paraded through Hebron on Purim, carrying puppets of various images. When they arrived at Beit Romana, one of the settlers placed a keffiyeh on the hanging effigy of Haman. Local Arabs understood what this meant, took offense. Last two sentences. It is not unlikely that Goldstein, who moved from the United States to Kiryat Arba in 1983, participated in the 1986 Purim parade. It is even more likely, if you have a red pen, now's the time to take it out. It is even more likely that sometime before 1994, Goldstein, who was a graduate of Yeshiva University, read Kol Dovid Dofek. So what is Eliot Horowitz doing? Professor of Jewish History at Bar Ilan University. He draws a direct line. You hear what I'm saying? He draws a direct line from this footnote on Kol Dovid Dofek to Baruch Goldstein, which means that the issue of identifying who Amalek is not a din in Talmud Torah only. It's not a din in trying to figure out, Sotaka, what does the Pasuk mean, and what does Chazal mean, and it's halacha l'maisa. I talked about it's me'inyona d'yoma, me'inyona d'yoma, not because we're Erev Purim, because me'inyona d'yoma right now, look to the right side, there's a guy, Mordechai Richler, some of you may have read, he's a novelist from Canada, and he writes about Mechias Amalek. His grandfather, Zayda, was a sofer, so he was Mekayim, the mitzvah of Mechias Amalek, by taking his pen before he started to write the Kisvei HaKodesh, before he started to write the Safros, he would write the word Amalek and cross it out. That's a minute. When I was in yeshiva on Purim, we were Mekayim, Mechias Amalek, we would take our shoes and we wrote Amalek on the soles of our shoes and then we walked around and we rubbed it out. So we were Mekayim, Mechias Amalek. And he talks about Amalek in the last paragraph. Amalek was the grandson of Esav, an ancestor of the Amalekites, nomads in the land between Egypt and Canaan, many of whose descendants can no doubt now be found organizing for Hamas in the Palestinian camps of Khan Yunis, Rafah, Jabalia, and Gaza town. What do we have here now? We have Amalek is alive, is real, is a subject of massive, massive consideration. Final preliminary text. Op-ed, New York Times, August 2004. So this is an article by Jeffrey Goldberg, who writes for The New Yorker, and he goes to Ofra on the West Bank. And he falls into a conversation, paragraph number 3, line 5, the line beginning with the word schnapps. I fell into conversation with an acquaintance of mine, a woman named Ayelet, who is in her late teens, pregnant, the daughter of a former assistant professor of history at City College. She's a resident, right here. She's a resident of an outpost in the radical settler heartland near Nablus, Shechem. We were interrupted by the newborn's father, a goat farmer, as he began giving a Dvar Torah. This is the op-ed page of the New York Times yesterday, Mamish, 2 years ago. An interpretation of a Bible passage. He turned rather quickly to the threat posed by the Amalekites, the eternal enemy of the Jews, a tribe that, according to the Bible, attacked Moses and the children, it should be of Israel, on their exodus from Egypt. Quote, Amalek, in the language of the settler hardcore today, often stands for Arabs, the existential enemy of the Jews. Quote, I am looking at our life today and what Amalek wants to do, Belashen Hover, right now, wants to do. And Amalek is not a Yena tribe that we read about in Parshas B'Shalach. Zohar Eis Asher Asalucha Amalek 3,000 years ago. What Amalek wants to do is to swallow up the people of Israel, the father said. This is the snake. I turned to Ayelet. She wore a long skirt, her hair was covered, she carried an M16. I asked her if she thought Amalek was alive today. Of course, she said, and pointed out the door toward an Arab village in the distance. The Amalekite spirit is everywhere, it's not just the Arabs. Who else then? Quote, Sharon isn't Amalek, she said, but he works for Amalek. Now, why do I show this to you? I show this to you because I want you to realize deep how the definition of Amalek is me'inyona d'yoma, is real. And trying to figure out who Amalek is has massive repercussions, because then all of the halachas with regard to Amalek then would apply to whoever we identify as Amalek. And we have now a suggestion made on the table in print that Baruch Goldstein as a graduate or a student at Yeshiva University, must have read Kol Dor Di Dor Feik, and that must have influenced him. And the stakes are huge. And not only are Arabs Amalek, oh, Sharon, she did me a favor, I yell at, she said, Sharon is really not Amalek, but he's working for Amalek. So now we have Amalek expanded to the people that Sharon is working for. It's huge, it's powerful, it's gut-wrenching, it's intense. I don't care what your politics are vis-a-vis what's going on. That's totally not my interest. My interest is only to sensitize you to the power of the definition of Amalek and its implications in today's society. Okay, I'm stopping. Any thoughts, any comments? Yeah.
Well, I have a question about Amalek. How do you get from Amalek being in the Bible, it's a people, mm-hmm. it's a certain people, and then you get now them saying that Amalek is not a people,
right.
It's a
So that's the way Rav Moshe Soloveitchik understood the Rambam. The fact that the Rambam says that Amalek is still alive, when in fact Amalek should not be any more alive, just like the seven nations are, which therefore perforce forces us to reinterpret Amalek to be a concept and not a people.
Okay, but it was a people.
It was a people, and now it's to some extent a people, to some extent a concept. It can't just be a people, because if it was just a people, then the same kvar avad zichrom, the same loss of identity that is relevant to the seven nations would have been relevant to Amalek also. Yeah.
Also,
the Pasuk says, as Amalek, that is Amo. As therefore?
Therefore, it sounds like Amalek isn't only the nation, it's remaining as a nation.
Okay, so you bring your raya to Ramesh's position. Okay. You're sitting here chomping on your chopsticks or whatever you're doing. I mean, you should be jumping up and down. This is wild. I mean, what do you do with this? What do you do with this? This is like so powerful. So what is Amalek? It's not an intellectual exercise. It's in your face. Yeah.
According to that interpretation, doesn't that make what Amalek is very subjective? I mean, anyone could say that they're harming the Jewish people and then have the right to kill them.
Almost. I like the almost. Why almost? See, that's my thing. Say it straight. And we can't even say it. You have to add the almost because you're choking on it. How can you not add the almost? We have an obligation to murder them, to destroy them, to kill them in 2007. If you're a Amalek, it's a chiyuv midoraisa. I kill you, boom, you're dead. Finish. There's no finessing this. There's no making nice. There's no political correctness. You take a gun and you're shooting. You take an axe and you chop their head off. That's what's going on here. This is real. What do you make of it? It's huge. So your question is, it's subjective. So let's say, kulam haydu v'himlichu v'amru, that this group wants to kill Jews. Let's limit it to that. It's a little better maybe, but it's still pretty powerful. Yes?
Well, I mean, the specific example that I think everybody's mind would turn to would be Hitler,
uh-huh.
I don't think I wouldn't have a problem saying Hitler specifically would mm-hmm. be subject to the rules under which Amalek is prescribed. Mm-hmm. I don't think that would be perfectly reasonable.
Okay.
Now, when you extend it, if you're somebody trying to extend it to the entire German people, mm-hmm. for every person who is a family of a Nazi member, I think you might have more problems with that. But someone who is, it once becomes an idea, then I don't think it's any more a national idea. It has to be the specific people who believe, subscribe
right.
to that idea of wholehearted
right.
destruction of Jewish people.
Right.
Those people, I think, have generally taken actions which I would think have been set free. Anybody who believes in any sort of death penalty would agree those people are
uh-huh. Okay. So, one second. Yeah. So, I don't think Rav Moshe would say that if you're a family member of a member of the Nazi Party, you are ergo slated for extermination by Jews. I don't think he would say that. I think he would say, if you really want to kill Jews. So you're saying you can understand that.
Yeah.
And if you determine, as Baruch Goldstein apparently determined, that the Palestinians in Hebron at that moment of the Maris HaMachpelah wanted to kill Jews, so then the implications are, so b'vakasha, you mekayim the mitzvah d'oraisa and you kill them. Then a rodef maybe.
On the other side of the coin, couldn't one argue that when Amalek attacked Israel in the Bible, it wasn't that only the warriors attacked. It wasn't that everyone in Amalek was a supreme warrior who hated Jews. I'm sure Amalek had water carriers. I'm sure Amalek had families. I'm sure they were a normal people that had all the support system that they needed for the extreme people to go ahead and attack Israel. And in that vein, you could say that it's similar to, at least in Baruch Goldstein's eyes, even though these Arabs were not yet terrorist bombers, precisely, the fact that they associated with that community and supported their ideals maybe is enough for him to put them in the category of Amalek.
Probably was. And it's, are you like gripped by this? Is this like boring? Is this like something to think about? Yeah.
Perkal Machin Lachin, the Ram says, three mitzvahs, and then it says, Lachin Beis, Minan Malach Kaidon Machin Zamoid, and it goes on that you need Shemin and Mishcha and Machin Space Lavin. So we don't have Machin Space Lavin and Shemin and Mishcha.
So it's a wonderful question. Okay, you have the same Rav that I have. You have the same text that I have. So you should actually go and read the full footnote. And then I think in the full footnote, you'll get an answer to that question. Because Rav Moshe basically says, as one would expect Rav Moshe the Brisker to say, that there are tzvei dinim in Amalek. That in fact there is a shtickle din in Amalek of an ethnic designation. And there's also this din in Amalek of an attitude. So how that exactly plays itself out in light of the Kvar Avad Zichron not appearing in the halacha with regard to Amalek, you have to work through the footnote.
Even if you have Amalek,
so then with regard to the specific Amalek, then I need a minui melech and then shmo shalem and then kisar shalem achim chazar shalem alek. But with regard to the concept, Hitler, Nasser, the Mufti, they line up. They're all in the category of Amalek. Yeah.
To respectfully disagree with Josh, it sounds like...
Who's Josh?
Josh.
Oh, okay. I appreciate the respectfully. Yeah. And I'm sure Josh does too.
It sounded very much like there is a shift from Amalek as an ethnic and national designation, mm-hmm. whereby you could include the faith of water carriers and support staff to today, where I believe it was Noah who was saying there's very much more of which individuals are actively targeting us.
Right.
Or else you very much end up with questions of collateral damage regarding, oh, so therefore they're making uniforms for the army. Which
right.
Army
is that also part of?
Does
that's
that
correct.
Count, yes or no? Mm-hmm. I would argue that you end up with significant ramifications if you say that anyone who lives in a nation where their leader opposes Israel is now under the definition of Amalek, mm-hmm. and therefore to take a different action, for example.
Right, excellent, right.
With respect. You're right. In the sense that in Amalek, probably everyone shared to some extent the ideology. And in the Arab world today, that ideology is mixed. But the fact that the masses do not stand up and represent themselves, which has a lot to do with the fact that they live in a society of fear, and they do stand up, they'll get killed. But the fact that they don't stand up and represent that ideology makes them a silent majority that is insignificant. And since they are represented by the leader with that certain ideology that they want to wipe out the Israel, right? The fact that they don't stand up, it means that they have defaulted into that ideology by whether they like it or not. And the fact they live there makes them, at least in Baruch Goldstein's eyes, the part of the broader community of Amalek.
So if I understand you correctly, by virtue of being born into a country whose ideology they disagree with but don't speak out against, they deserve that penalty.
They deserve to be called a member of that country.
Therefore,
and that the ramification of being killed is just the Torah obligation. That's just.
That's just
a hutzah.
It's just a hutzah that they.
Okay. This is great because what we're trying to do here is to grapple.
We'll talk later.
I wish we had more time. Remember, I told you 8:27 and a half. We have to grapple. We're grappling with what is Amalek and what is the implications. Who is Nichla B'chalal Amalek? Do they have to have a suicide, a murder belt on their bodies to be Amalek? Do they have to have a gun in their hands shooting to be Amalek? Where do you draw the line? I would have a hard time saying that somebody who lives in Iran and is afraid to speak against the government should have the halacha of Amalek. It's not like he's an Iranian, so Mamela Agav Grora, so he has a halacha of Amalek. I would have a hard time with that.
He's not Zara Shalamalek.
I would have a hard time. Yeah, but understand, Zara Shalamalek now has a different explanation. Zara Shalamalek means so it's a concept.
You could say it's Zina Basar Rov.
But Zina Basar Rov, when it comes to murder, I mean, but what you're saying is it's even worse than what I'm saying. You know? I mean, I'm not saying it. I'm showing you. I mean, it's like you can't believe that. You can't believe that.
I'm just playing the devil's advocate.
What?
I'm just playing the devil's advocate. I don't necessarily believe that.
Oh, okay. Okay, good. So he nailed you. He nailed you. You're mighty. He nailed you. Yes.
We're speaking about killing a Malik in very real terms, but yes. Love, I don't think, ever went that far to say to go out and kill a Malik.
Yeah, so what did he mean? What did he mean when he said that the Nazis have a halacha of a Malik, that a Malik today is not, that Nasser is a Malik? So what does that mean? That's Stam and Develtemein? That's like, it's like a hashkafa?
I mean, it could be the thing you were saying before, the Tzvei Dinim thing, where it's not...
So you have to look at the footnote. But there's one of the dinim of the Tzvei Dinim is that Amalek is a concept. So if Amalek is a concept, so then there are implications with the concept of Amalek.
Are you able to kill someone based on a Tzvei Dinim?
I'm wonderful. So you know Rav Nachum Rabinovich. I'm sure you've heard of Rav Nachum Rabinovich, who's a Rosh Yeshiva in Ma'alei Adumim. Maybe some of you even learned. In Ma'ale Adumim, or you know people who do. Rav Nachum Rabinovich is not what you call a left-winger politically. He is quite actually a right-winger politically. He has a sefer on Hilchos Milchama. He has a sefer that he wrote on the laws of army and war, and specific shilas with regard to Tzahal. And he writes in his sefer, he has two pages attacking the Rav and his father, and saying that there's no basis whatsoever in halacha to have any implications of Amalek being other than what you had suggested, being other than a people. And he works with the Diuk and the Rambam. But to say, therefore, that Amalek is now this concept, he says, is drush and should have zero halachic ramifications whatsoever. And I can get you the reference if you want. So, but short of that, the Chayre, he interpreted the Rav to mean that it does have halachic implications. I appreciate what you're trying to do. I'm just pressing you to be more precise then. So what did the Rav mean when he said this is Amalek? Yeah.
Is it possible that the Rav held that this in the Amalek is very similar to like a din and lodi today?
Uh-huh.
That you have to be actually in the process. I think he's very specific in his words. Uh-huh. The mobs of the Mufti and the Nasser.
Right, right. Uh-huh, good.
When he says the mobs of the Mufti and the Nasser, he's saying people who are mounting to the moon.
Right, excellent. So therefore, Horowitz's line from the Rav to Baruch Goldstein is preposterous, you're suggesting.
Other than being poor scholarship and suggesting.
I'm not donning his scholarship now. It's very interesting. Eliot Horowitz, I'm sure some of you may have read, some of you should have read somewhere, he's written profusely. He is a very formidable scholar. In the beginning, in the Hakadama to this book, he lost it. He lost his scholarly objectivity totally. And his political feelings are just right out on the table. I have never read a book published by a university press that is so blatantly political and so blatantly non-authentically scholarly. So you want to have a taina to his scholarship? That's great. But I'm talking about, look what happens. Maybe it's a lesson in, you know, Hishamer es pichem. You know, look what happens. Look what happens. The Rav writes something, and the next thing you know, 51 years later, 50 years later, look where it ends up. Now, you could say Horowitz had no basis in drawing this conclusion from Rabbi Soloveitchik. We are appalled, perhaps, by even imagining that Rabbi Soloveitchik's position would lead to something like this. Maybe we're not, but maybe we are. So we try to say, no, the Rav didn't mean it. The Rav was much more circumscribed in defining Amalek. When Medayik and the Rav, the mobs, they're mamish, they're knocking down the door, they're ready to kill you. No, abol argo, ashkem la argo. But din and raidif, I don't need Amalek for din and raidif. I mean, And if somebody wants to kill me, so I can kill them without them, without calling them a malik. So vas lake tzu, what is the Rav adding by calling them, and the them is still open to question, them a malik? Who didn't speak yet? Yeah, no.
With all due respect to Ayala, I think she takes it too far. I think she misunderstands the notion of a malik and associates it with the idea of evil. Mm-hmm. And I think that does cross the red line in terms of who mm-hmm. we're willing to put in the camp of a malik mm-hmm. or not.
Okay.
Because to call a Jew someone who works for a malik,
I think
is a misunderstanding of what a malik really
right.
is.
So then I would invite you then to, when you have time, write a paragraph on, so what is a malik? So you're saying that she overextended Amalek. Sharon is not Amalek. So she did me a taiva and she said Sharon is not Amalek. But Sharon works for Amalek. But that's over the top. That's, you say, crosses the red line.
Why?
What? What is Amalek?
That's saying that Amalek is evil. And anyone who works for evil or practices something that's evil, works for Amalek.
Any other? Yeah.
I just want to point out that my personal views aside, Baruch Wilson was from Guy and had Ravan, who I've heard supported him. And mm-hmm. so I'm not saying it was necessarily based on this, but I agree with what you said before, that if it was just someone who's coming to you, then it's just a din rota. If you don't need a din rota,
correct.
There'd be something else there.
Correct. I want to make it very clear. This is not a political conversation. In other words, I'm not saying Baruch Goldstein did the right thing. I'm not saying Baruch Goldstein did the wrong thing. I think he did the wrong thing, but that's not relevant. He had Rabbeim, he didn't have Rabbeim. He had Das Torah, he didn't have Das Torah. What is relevant for me is somebody who is smart wrote a letter to the editor 6 months ago and said that Rabbi Soloveitchik's Kol Dodi Do Fake, where he says that Amalek is not a nation but a notion, found its expression with Baruch Goldstein. Now, I'm just dropping that bombshell on you, and I invite you to think about it. That's all. I got 4 more pages of Lumbis, but, next time. Maybe next year, Arya, you'll invite me back. Or maybe before next year. Yeah.
I ain't going to that now and then, what Brandon said. And, if you just want to take things on, quite a sharper definition. Anyone who actively is working for the destruction of the state and nation of Israel. And I think Ayala could very well make that argument in her mind that Sharon fits into that definition, and therefore it's not such a stretch. Mm-hmm. Even if you want to say, oh, evil's too broad, you break it down, I think you can still find a satisfactory definition for a model that doesn't fit into. In terms of what Randrew said regarding the line, well, no, it's only people who are mobbed or coming to kill you, I think that you just took one vague definition and substituted another one. What does it mean that someone's trying to kill you? Like, take, for example, now again, sorry for getting that horse, going back to Iran. Does the mere threat and rhetoric of, once we get a bomb, we're going to blow you up, does that count as we're coming to kill you? How much of that is political posturing? How much of that is an actual legitimate threat? If you go through all the rhetoric in the Arab world, how much of that is legitimate threats? How much of that is rhetoric? And who gets to determine whether or not they're actually coming to get us? Again, going back to what we're talking about Baruch Goldstein, does the potentiality for future harm, even if they're not expressing it now, count as someone who eventually will come to break you, and therefore preemptive attack is legitimate in those situations? You took one big definition and substituted another one, which I find equally unhelpful.
That's you. He's talking to you, right? Okay. Okay. Who didn't speak yet? Yes.
I wanted to sort of break the link between Goldstein and Rabbi Soloveitchik by suggesting.
I'm happy to hear that. That's good.
So suggesting some commentates with the one who pointed to the Rambam Sefer Malachim already. I think there is a difference between the national versus individual scope of this. That it's really not for an individual to decide halakha l'maaseh who Amalek is. It may be possible by community consensus to do that. I don't really know what community consensus is. Community consensus with regard to issues like smicha is obviously a very complicated issue. But to say that I'm deciding this and therefore I'm going to act on that, I think that's that is a waste of anyway.
So you are in a different way circumscribing Rabbi Soloveitchik's position and thereby making it irrelevant to the behavior of Baruch Goldstein. I appreciate the sentiment. I appreciate the effort and may even appreciate the actual substance. Okay. I have Mamish. Yes.
No, go ahead.
I have 7 minutes. I just want to walk you through the rest of the sheet so at least you'll know what's here when you're going to look at it on your own if you're interested, because I don't have time to go over it with you. I deal here with two issues with regard to Amalek, the rest of the sheets. Pages 6 and 7 deals with the medieval problem. Let me sketch out for you for a moment the medieval problem. The medieval problem about Amalek was very simple. I told you before, I pointed to the Psukim in Parshas Vayishlach, Esav hu Edom, and Esav has an enikal Amalek. Amalek equal Esav equal Edom. Amalek equal Edom. Edom equal Amalek. So I hope you know that in medieval times, Edom was real, and Edom was absolutely identifiable, and Edom equaled Rome, and Rome equaled Christianity. We are now in the four Golios. We are in the last Golos, and what's the last Golos called? Golos Edom. Who was responsible for Golos Edom? Rome. Rome, when Rome perpetrated the Churban, was not Christianity, because it was just very shortly after the death of the founder of Christianity, but the Roman Empire was not Christian until later on, until the 3rd century, the beginning of the 4th century. Rome became identified with Christianity, became Edom, became Amalek. So in the Middle Ages, Amalek was Christianity, and the Jews would have loved nothing more than to kill Christians, because Christians made Jewish lives miserable in the Middle Ages. If you took any course, you read any history book, even in high school, you probably, hopefully, had a chance to study medieval Jewish history. It was horrible. Jews had a very difficult time. They wanted to kill Christians, but there was a problem. The problem was that the balance of power was so out of whack that it would be impossible for them to kill Christians. Who had the power? Who had the strength? Who had the army? Who was the king? Who had wealth? The Christians. The Jews had nothing. The Jews were powerless. The Jews lived at the mercy in Christian countries of their Christian authorities. So the Jews asked themselves, how could the Torah be mechayev me to do something that is impossible for me to fulfill? I know who Amalek is, and I would love to kill Amalek, but I can't. My hands are tied. My other hand is tied. I can't possibly, given the geopolitical reality in which I live, fulfill this mitzvah. So how could the Torah be mechayev me something to do something that I can't do? I'm an erlich yid. I want to do all the mitzvahs. I can't do it. And so you have, on page 6 and 7, a whole series of approaches to try to understand this, or approaches that were presented that were used. So for example, the Ramban, go back to your Rambam. The Ramban says, Amalek is a din in the melech. The Ramban says at the bottom of page 6, V'ra'inyan kika asher yihyeh melech b'Yisrael yoshev al-kizei Hashem. Then Yilochem Amalek. That's what, Taka, I don't have a chiyuv today. Today, living in Golis in the 7th century, the 12th century, the 14th century, I don't have a melech. I don't have a melech. I don't have a chiyuv. Take a look at the Smak at the top of page 7. The Smak quotes two halachas with regard to Amalek. Mitzvah Chav Gimel is Shalol Lishkoach Ma'asa Amalek. And Mitzvah Kuf Mem Vav is Lishkor Ma'asa Amalek. So what's missing from the Smak, the Hilik Smak?
Yilochem.
Killing Amalek, destroying Amalek, it's not in there. V'chule, v'chule. And then the last two pages is what I would say is a more modern issue. And the more modern issue is what we would call the moral or ethical issue. I read to you Dafka, the psukim earlier in Shmuel Aleph, Perek Tezvav, that really talk about the obligation of the Chiyas Amalek in very graphic terms. Lo sachmo lo lo vehemata me ish ad isha olel al yonek mishor ad semi gomol vadchamor. What did the gomol do? And what did the yonek do? I thought the Torah is a Torah's chesed. I thought that the Torah is a Torah's chayim. I thought that the Torah is a Torah of avo. I thought that the Torah understands that there are people in the world who aren't Jews who also have value. I thought that the Torah loves and how could the Torah tell me to go take a baby and kill a baby? How could the Torah do something that it would appear to me to be something that I don't understand? It seems to be like not really very moral. And it seems to be like not really very ethical. Assuming that I can identify a Amalek. Excuse me, ma'am. What is your pedigree? I am an Amalekite. Shalom Aleichem. They're your neighbor. You take out their garbage. You babysit for them. You buy them food. You get them to the supermarket. And all of a sudden, you realize, one day you have a conversation, and she tells you that she's from Amalek. That's it. Goodbye! It's done! You're toast! Why? What's this? What did she do to you? The modern question is an ethical question. And I'm not even talking about political correctness. Meichel political correctness. Din in human decency. How could the Torah be mechayev? How could God's loving Torah be mechayev me to kill babies who descend from a tribe that 3,000 years ago gave me a heart? And that's the subject of Avi Sagi's article. And I gave you the reference on page one from Harvard Theological Review. Avi Sagi writes an article, it's called The Punishment of Amalek in Jewish Tradition, Coping with the Moral Problem. Understand me very well, in the Middle Ages there was no moral problem. In the Middle Ages, halavai I can kill. I'd love nothing better than to kill. Rob them out, destroy them, kill them, torture them, just like they're doing to me. I would love to do it. Only let me. Never, I can't. In modern times, we've become as a able and as a shame and as a ethical. And all of a sudden, what's going on? What's going on? And I'll show you in my last comment, because I have a minute, I'll show you that that's a Gemara Numis puts this into the mouth of Shalom Melech. Turn to the middle of page 8. The Gemara Yuma Chavez Amidez Vayorev Vanochal. It's in the middle of page 8 on the right hand side. It's one of the psukim with regard to the Parsha and Shmuel about Amalek. Vayorev Vanochal Amar Rav Mani Al Iske Nachal. Bisha'o She'amar Lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu L'Sha'ul. Leich V'Hikiso Es Amalek. Amar, what did Shaul say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu when HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, kill Amalek? He said to him, he, lowercase h, said to him, uppercase h, Uma nefesh achas, Amra Torah havei egla arufa. So you know the parasha of egla arufa. One nefesh, you don't know what happened. Any odea mi harogo, you have to start measuring from this down, you have to bring a carbon, it's a whole business, because we're worried about the death of one human being. Uma nefesh achas havei egla arufa. Kol hanefeshes halolu alachas kama vekama. V'im adam chota behema machota. What did behemoth do? What did the sweet little dogala? I love dogs. We just finished it. Today was the Westminster dog thing in Madison Square Garden. 12,000 dogs descended in New York. We have now the king of the dogs. They decided, they voted on a dog. It's a beautiful dog. The dog is owned by Amalek. What did he do to me? Why? Shaul says to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. V'im adam chata behema machata. That's mamish the question. That's the question. And what's the answer in the Gemara? What does Hashem tell Shaul? Yotza basko va'amra lo, al tehi tzadikar. It's an amazing answer. Don't be such a frummy. Don't be so moral. Don't be so ethical. Lazap, leave me alone. Al tehi tzadikar. Is that an answer? So now I feel better about killing them. Now it's more moral. Al tehi tzadikar. Ratzon habore. End of discussion.